rest of the barn. Yeah. They were out there spraying. They're using mine.
We're live.
She was all cleaning up this year. So.
Mm-hmm. You didn't say it, Randy.
Garland will do everything, all the broadleaf.
It'll burn it down.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
The dockside daisy. Mm-hmm. Napweed.
Any of the
plantain
asters.
Or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're live.
I think fine.
Oh, you got her bourbon.
She's okay. Secretary, she probably wants it.
Oh, we have a quorum. I'll go ahead and call a meeting to order. Clark County Noxious Weed Control Board for May 6th. So, the first order of business be approval of the minutes as presented or mailed. I don't think I've seen them mailed.
Anybody need an extra? Minutes?
No.
I will move to accept as presented.
Okay.
Second.
Motion and second to adopt the minutes as presented. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. Okay. Took care of that.
Can General Guest just join?
Yes. Go ahead and sign in.
And I guess second order of business up to you, Justin. WSN annual. Yeah.
Right, yeah. So the State Noxious Weed Control Board is reviewing RCW 1710, proposing some changes to it. And at the same time, WSDA is proposing some changes to the Washington Administrative Code 16, 230, 231, 232. So it's a big, long document. I do have the unabridged version, but I've... made a summary for you and tried to pull together the things that are notable, maybe the things that are most interesting, things that are still proposed and things that have been withdrawn in their process. You'll notice there's sort of two headings there on my summary, one that's no longer included. I just wanted to briefly touch on these changes, first going over the RCW. I would say the most important thing that was proposed and now is no longer included are the special rules for the forest land. Used to be that forest lands, their special status and their special exemptions, they proposed that that be eliminated and that they be treated exactly the same as every other type of land. That is on hold. Every change to the forest land section of RCW 1710, that's all on hold. The last I had heard from correspondence that the State Weed Board, they were going to have another talk with everybody in forestry, the representatives there, to see if they could strike a compromise and see if they could, you've got some notes in here, having an intermediate option as far as increasing the size of the buffer on the edges of the forest land, taking out the 5-year period after harvesting timber, but that's all on hold. So we might see no change at all to the RCW on that. If you guys have any other questions or you'd like me to go over any of these points as far as specifics, I'd be happy to do so. Or if you'd like to see the full unabridged, whatever this is, 920 lines of the actual code and the changes that were at least talked about, or the changes that are still proposed moving forward, then yeah, I do have that document as well. We can go over it.
It's not redacted like the Mueller report?
No.
Okay, all right.
No, they're very open with it. No.
So you get all the timber companies coming in on those meetings?
Yeah. Yeah, they have representatives that are definitely coming in for that and trying to make their voice heard. And I would assume that'd be why we're seeing the
because I noticed a bunch of Scotch broom the other day along the Forest Service Road on Weyerhaeuser.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. If it was on mine, I'd have to take care of it.
Yeah. That's right.
Hmm.
So the way the RCW reads for timberlands, they have some special exemptions. And if you want, we can go over that. I think you guys are pretty familiar with what their special exemptions are. Does anybody have any questions on that?
Not really.
Okay.
Justin, what is the process at the state level look like for these changes? Is this something that the state weed board is discussing? And then if they decide to move forward with anything, what's the next step?
Yeah, I think that it is still a discussion right now. They have had a hearing at least. I know that there's probably been more than one hearing where it's open to the public. I'm not familiar with the whole process of it. I assume that after everything's solidified and they know what they really have the support for, that they would then go through that whole process to amend the law. So it's a good question.
Yeah. I don't know if they have rulemaking authority or does it need to go to the legislature?
I would assume it would need to go to the legislature, yeah. As far as I know, they don't have any rulemaking authority on that.
Everybody else seems to.
Yeah.
Is this coming out of the code advisor's office?
I'm not sure. So, hearing no questions or anything, I'll move on to the next section, which is the Washington Administrative Code. pretty much everything that I'm seeing in this doesn't really apply to Clark County. You can see I printed off an email from Mary Fee. This is all other counties seem to be affected by it. So I'll just skip right over that.
Something. Okay. Never mind.
Okay. Then I can move right along to the program updates. So, just to catch you guys up to speed, the position that I vacated as a field inspector has now been filled. We had somebody who was in vegetation management working for the noxious weed control program named Jeff Duvall, and he's successfully backfilled my position. So he's now working as a permanent field inspector. We've also got two temporary staff that have been hired on now and are going to be working for us on the field inspection side. I've just recently submitted the proposal for the Japanese knotweed grant, so we'll wait and see if we get that funding, if that's been approved. And you guys might get asked quite a bit, what is the weed board doing about tansy all over the roadsides? Just recently, I've booked up several days, 13 days, in the month of July, that the Department of Corrections crew is going to be out along the roadsides pulling the tansy, so that we'll get a little bit extra help in addition to the temporary staff that we
normally. You're going to pull it rather than spray it?
You know, that late in the season, it needs to be pulled, and a lot of times it works pretty well to pull it.
But when Justin? When was it? July?
Oh, yeah. All the way to July.
July, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep. If you want, you can take a look at
it. Okay. Are you treating the roadside before that, though, mm-hmm. for the majority
hey, Justin,
of get them?
I'd like to.
Yeah. Yep.
Can I pass?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, the next thing in your packets is the field inspection calendar. This is just to kind of give you an idea of the things that we have going on. You can see that we've broken it down by the noxious weeds that we have in the county. And there's quite a lot going on in the month of May and June. There's quite a bit of overlap there. but we do have some notes to make here. You can see that there's already been three education and outreach events that we've attended, staffed. Small Acreage Expo, the Earth Day event that is with CPU. They sometimes call it EcoFest. And it's got quite a few names. And then also the Home and Garden Idea Fair. The Home and Garden Idea Fair was especially a big success for us. We recorded contacts with 1,037 members of the public, where we were able to inform them in some way about noxious weeds. Numbers for the other two events. On the EcoFest on Earth Day, we had more than 200 people, and on the Small Acreage Expo, more than 60 people. So the timing that you see on this calendar is approximate. The timing would change if the year is hotter or wetter. Just depends on how the weeds are growing, so it's subject to some discretion. But right now we are in peak season. We're in full swing on garlic mustard and slender flower thistle. And one of our field inspectors has already gone along with the Washington State Department of Transportation and shown them where all the slender flower thistle is on I-5, and they've sprayed together so that we've taken care of that. Another one of our field inspectors is coordinating to ride along with the railroad spray contractor, not the Clark County railroad. I'll let Danielle talk about that if she wants to, but this is for the other railroad, BNSF and Burlington Northern. So you can see that we're going to continue to have quite a lot going on as per our calendar. Does anybody have any questions on the calendar, or can I just move right along? Okay.
You have plans to put the signage back out for Tansy Rig work?
Yep. Yeah, we will put the signage.
Any idea what date you're going to start doing that? Or?
I want to get that out before the tansy is blooming, and we can get people to start thinking about it. So I don't know exactly what day. I can look through and see when Casey put it out and just kind of keep status quo. That seemed to work really well last year. So.
It seemed like it was in June, I think.
Okay.
And then we blacked out the dates on it, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Or will.
Is that back?
Yeah, that's that back to Justin.
So the next thing that you can see in your packets is a letter, a form letter that was sent out to 84 landowners. This was sent out April 23rd. And it went out to all the landowners that had Class A noxious weeds. So already we've received some feedback from this letter, and it was a lady who had giant hogweed last year, and we found it as part of the priority weed control assistance program, where we surveyed her property and controlled the hogweed for her. But now this year, she counts as one of the people who had a Class A weed last year. So she got this letter. She called in and was really concerned, wanted to know what our process is going to be with this, because, you know, you can read the letter. It talks about how landowners need to control the noxious weeds. Class A's are a top priority. She let me know she's 83 years old. Her husband is 94. She doesn't know what to do for giant hogweed. You know, how should she approach this? She wanted to know if she should rent a tractor. And I said, no, you don't want to rent a tractor. This is right alongside the stream. You have very dense brush. You're not going to get a tractor in there. That's not really what you need to do. So you can see how the combination of the Class A letter as outreach and the priority weed control assistance program is finding the weeds in the first place with all the permission to surveys that we obtained. It's a really good combination. Now we're getting somebody who calls us in response to this letter, and we're working with them. I have an appointment with her to go out, show her what we're talking about, and, you know, let her know, hey, you can have, you know, somebody who's a little more spry, maybe you've got some nephews, you can certainly hire a contractor. We'll get it resolved in a positive way for her so that she can get used to controlling it. She thought, since we had been there last year, maybe it's all wiped out. The Class A letter was a great opportunity for me to say, no, it's probably not going to be all wiped out. You can see at the very beginning of the letter, it talks about how this letter has been sent to all owners of lands on which Class A weeds were growing in 2018 because they are likely to grow in the same areas again this year. You've got a seed bank, so it's probably going to keep coming back. So, yeah, the Class A letter was successful already at that sort of outreach.
Good.
So, you'll notice some similarities with some other letters that I'll touch on a little bit later. The Class A letter was modified very, very slightly from what Casey had last year. So the next thing I wanted to talk about is the new things that we're taking on with the field inspection program. I've directed our field inspectors to record new types of surveys. There'll be two new types. One's called a negative survey, and another one's called unable to survey. And there are two different things that both have a unique purpose, that it's just going to really be for the field inspectors. It's not going to be for the other parts of vegetation management. Just a moment. The negative survey is for when we are going back to properties that we have noticed noxious weeds in the past, and we're looking for that same infestation, and we don't find it. So this might be because the landowner has already controlled it before we get there, which is a great thing. Or it might be because, well, now the whole thing's paved over, and it's a parking lot now, which works for us, too. I've directed the field inspectors to record that, whereas before we would really enter no report at all. We didn't find anything. We're not sending any letter to anybody. But I want to record that because it shows statistically that things are happening in a positive way. So from now on, whenever the noxious weed species would be clearly visible in this location, you know, we would be able to see it by this time of year, they would record this negative survey. It sounds like a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. Negative meaning, you know, the weed's not there. And I also directed them to record if the property's been mowed as a negative survey. So it might be the case that there'll be a negative survey, but then we'll have a follow-up in the system that'll remind us, hey, it's been mowed, it's probably going to have to, you know, be surveyed again. So we would come back, and if they need more touches, more follow-ups with them, and then we have to send them a letter later on, then we'll address that and probably end up deleting the negative survey and just making a note that it was controlled earlier but needs to be controlled again. So this is kind of one of our wins. It's a positive result for us. I wanted to include that in our statistics moving forward to be able to show, hey, this is what's working. Here's the number of places where we didn't have to send our letter at all. So that will actually kind of account for our time as field inspectors of going around to places, and if we can show here's how many reports we wrote, well, that's decreasing from, you know, year to year. Why is that? Well, it might be because of success. It might be because there's less times where we're sending out a letter. I wanted to capture that. So negative surveys will just be for the priority weeds, the Class A's and the Class B designates. Not doing a whole bunch of negative surveys all over, but mostly the ones that are very important. So the unable to survey type would be for when we can't see the weeds. We can't see the infestation zone now. And they could be there, but we just can't see to tell. We don't really know. That potential infestation site is not visible. So it might just be because of an obstruction, like a fence now that's gone up. It might be that the road is a private road. We have in the past been able to drive down it. Now, you know, policy says we can't. And the policies on private roads are kind of nuanced. I can get into that if you want, but in brief, if multiple properties are along a private road, then we can drive down it. But if it's just one person's long driveway, we're not going to drive up somebody's driveway. That's not how we're going to do it. So if we can't see something and it's in the database from before, we'll record that. That way it'll kind of flag this for our attention. We'll have a report that says, we don't know if this infestation still exists. This will be really helpful for if we need to send out a letter that I'll get into a little bit down later on in the agenda, specifically dealing with this situation.
Can I ask a quick question? If it's an unable to survey field that you have previously surveyed, mm-hmm. is that going to then trigger to send something to the landowner to ask if you can come in and resurvey?
That's exactly what I'll touch on later on in our agenda, because that's what I want. I want to be able to do that. Historically, we haven't had any movement there. Do you guys have any questions about the differences between being unable to survey versus recording a negative survey?
No.
No? Okay. Great. So with those two surveys and also across the whole program, I really want to put emphasis on improving our effectiveness and the public perception that in general, we make less idle threats, sending off a warning letter to somebody who we would really never actually enforce action on, really kind of just a bluff. When they call our bluff, I've had a lot of people that are just kind of acquaintances of mine tell me, oh yeah, we get that letter from the Tansy and we just throw it away because all of us know nothing happens with it. They send off a warning letter when they don't really have the resources to prosecute every single person, and then nobody takes it seriously. So this will probably mean we send out less warning letters when the threshold for enforcement that we've reached is like you were talking about earlier, Randy. How many Tansy do they have? If they just have a dozen on 5 acres, really we don't have the resources to go after every single one of those people. Would we even want to? Versus what I want to do is educate people. Maybe they just moved from another state and they don't know about our laws and they have a dozen Tansy. That's a great opportunity, I feel, to send them an informational letter. And it doesn't say, don't worry about this in the future. It says, you have a noxious weed. It's designated for control. You do need to control this. This year, we're not threatening you, but we're letting you know. making kind of a distinction, telling people what they can expect from us. So in the future, I'd like to improve our public perception by making less idle threats and having more of a style towards the land management plan. Especially when we have contact with people, we've talked with them a lot, and every year we kind of get this same runaround where we have to keep calling them, keep contacting them, and they kind of pretend like, oh, this is news to me, I've never heard of this before. I want to have something that makes sure that every year they're taking care of it, that they know what they're required to do, and that's what's great about the land management plan. The land management plan is kind of like a contract. They sign it. It's good for, let's say, 5 years. And they know for every year, 5 years from now, I'm going to have to keep controlling my weeds. Like I talked about the seed bank. You all know that it's going to be here again next year. You've got tansy last year. It's going to be here again next year. Unless you pave it over or you have some miracle happen, most of the time you're going to have it come back up. So I want an emphasis on having them recognize, yeah, without you guys even talking to me, I know the law still applies. I'm going to have to come back through my fields and take care of the tansy.
But that's only for 5 years. Is that right, Justin? You're saying it's a 5-year plan?
Right, yeah.
Not any more than that? I mean,
that would be something we could revisit. If you want to talk about the longevity of the seeds in the soil, it could differ by species. Mm-hmm. I thought to myself, what would be something that I'd get somebody likely to sign? They sign something that says forever. You're probably going to get a lot more pushback on that. Yeah. And is it realistic to talk about forever with tansy? We've seen some places where somebody goes through and sprays in the fall, and they have just a fraction of the tansy that comes back. We can revisit it, and we can say, okay, you know, you are doing a great job with this, and so we'll check back with you. But the whole idea of the land management plan is I'm not hounding somebody. I don't have to send my inspector and to have them keep coming back year after year and start the process fresh, mm-hmm. kind of like what you guys have done when somebody gets to the process of citation. And you say, okay, and I've heard you guys say, okay, you know, this year we'll waive it, but next year we don't want to see you here again. We don't want to have this go on. We want you to understand what it is, and you're going to need to control it. That's exactly the same sort of thing that I want to have with a land management plan, where somebody's got a horrible infestation of tansy, they're going to have it next year. So let's have them sign off. And if you guys want to see it, the land management plan we've already got is pretty good, but it does need an update, and that's the next thing I wanted to touch on.
So, but that 5-year can be revisited after 5 years, though.
Absolutely.
And stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In the RCW, the land management plan seems to specifically exist for times when it would be an extreme financial burden on the landowner to control and eradicate every single Class A weed on their property. You could have rangeland of, you know, 1,000 acres, and you've got Class A weeds all over it. So this plan seems to be in place specifically for a situation where you can work with them, and it would lay it out year by year. Over 5 years, we want to see a reduction here. You have to comply with the law. We're going to make a specific plan for you that might say, you know, first year, 50%. Get a good buffer. Don't let it, but maybe you can't eradicate it all the first year. Just practically speaking, it would be a fortune. But then progressively, year after year after year, the land management plan lays it out so that they can follow something, they can have a contract, and, you know, 2 years from now, I'm not going to have to start fresh with them and have them say, I don't know what you're talking about. Treating it instead of like code enforcement might make sense, where they go back and they say, you know, now you've got a car, you know, that's blocking the road or something. We'll treat each incident as a new thing. We don't need to do that. We've got a seed bank, and it's going to be there. It's a multiple-year process already. So that's where I'd like to have our direction go. I'd really appreciate the land management plan reducing our workload so that we can go there maybe twice a year, once to see if they really complied with it. And then after that, if they didn't, contact them and let them know, hey, you're getting a fine. You know, you're in violation of your contract here. And then they can have one, you know, final effort versus all these contacts being made and, you know, you don't get a hold of them. I'd like to have it in the contract. If we don't hear from you and you don't get it done, that's on you. You know, you signed off on this contract. We need to hear from you. If your tractor breaks or there's an extenuating circumstance, maybe you're selling the property and it's right in the middle of the sale or, you know, some weird thing's going on, you call us. Don't make us hound you, you know, year after year. So,
okay.
I'll move right into that.
I got a question. When the taxes go out, and I'm talking about current use, open space, and maybe timberlands too, I'll shoulder to that, Randy. But if some kind of a notice, and I'm asking, I'm throwing out there, if some kind of a notice could be put in with them for current use people, that you have to turn around and control your weeds.
To maintain your current use status?
To maintain your current use status. That way, but it needs to be on a bright yellow sheet of paper or something that gets their attention or somewhere, if that could go out, because that mailer is going out anyway. And we're working on a new system, public benefit rating system for open space. And anybody new that comes in, they've got to have a farm plan. Us old dinosaurs don't have to have. But that, I don't know whether that language is in their application form or not. So I'm just throwing that out there that that would be a good way to reach all the current use people.
Is it a number of how many are on that?
They have, yes. There is a number. What did you ask, Randy?
How many people are on current use?
There's several thousand acres in current use. But I don't have that number.
One person could have 2,000 acres.
Right, right. But I would say, I'm thinking it's like 570 some people and like 800 or 900 in the other use, current use and open space. I don't have that in my gray matter.
So it's not going to be a real high cost to send those notices out.
Well, they'll be in with the taxes.
Yeah.
So it's just one sheet of paper.
I like that idea. I'm all about having things go out efficiently while you're already talking to somebody, you already have their attention. I know that we had talked before about enforcement style and coming back to current use, but didn't seem to get very far with that. But I like the idea of outreach. So I will definitely follow that lead and see if I can get in touch with the people that.
I mean, it's up to the group to decide. It was just something I threw out there, and it may help bring it to the attention of people that they need to be doing it. Without you having to go out and see it, they've been pre-warned about it, I guess.
Well, especially if they're receiving a benefit from the county, the citizens, you know, as far as, you know, a reduction in their taxes, they need to do their part, too.
Right.
Yeah.
And some of them probably don't know about it. They think all they have to do is throw a cow on their, their farm. Oh,
some of them don't even think they have to do that.
That's pretty funny last year.
That's okay. Like a good, efficient way to do it.
Okay, yeah. So if you guys want to, I just have one of these, but if you want to pass around a sample land management plan, you can also pass around this other one, maybe the other direction. I made some notes on that one too, little sticky notes. Basically, the land management plan is everything that we would talk to somebody about in person, but this is something they could keep a copy of. They can put it in, you know, put it in their files right next to, what do I spray? You know, here's the springtime. You know, what do I do? What's my plan for my property? They can have this land management plan somewhere where they can access, which is the idea. They could refer back to that, and 4 years from now, you know, if now we don't go out to talk to them, they could still be referring to this document. That's the idea, at least. They've signed it, they're responsible for it, and now we would have more of the process get taken care of, just like a lot of our really responsible people do.
What if they refuse to sign it?
Well, that's definitely an obstacle. The way I would couch it is, Bill, you have a Class B designated noxious weed.
I have lots of them, but
and,
I think we all do.
And you have so much of it in this property that you could get a fine this year. And this is, you know, this would be a situation where we really would go through with it. We would have the enforcement actually take place. And I'd say, I recognize that, you know, your property has been in foreclosure. It's been very, you know, financially hard for you. But this is still the same thing. So still the law. So work with me here. And this year, you only have to, you know, do this buffer strip, right? You can avoid having a fine this year if you sign this plan that says this year you make a buffer strip. Next year you make a bigger thing, and you know, work with me on this. Sign this plan, and you won't have a fine. If you don't, then you'll get to sit in front of the weed board and explain how you didn't want to sign it, and now we're at the fine process. So that's how I would work with them.
The farm management plan, you don't have to bring in a certified farmer to okay it.
Right, it's specifically for the noxious weeds.
So it's between the
right.
control board and the property owner.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That one coming this way.
So the land management plan does need an update, though. As it is there, it doesn't actually comply with the law. RCW 1710-154 specifically states that if you are bordering agricultural land, then you need a 1,000-foot buffer. You don't have an option there. You are required to have that in your land management plan. Our land management plan doesn't have anything in there about that, so I would need to update that as a stipulation. If you border agricultural land, then you really do need that. But specifically, this plan is, we talk to a lot of people, and we get them on the phone. We talk to them in person. You know, we have a good, you know, exchange. But then next year, where are they? They pretend like we've never talked with them. So it specifically is to address that and reduce our workload on the things that we shouldn't have a workload on. But yeah, at the end of 5 years, we can definitely renew that.
Take a look at
the same way. We could talk to them and say, look, you need to renew this for another 3 years, or you know, whatever the case may be. It wouldn't be in place of anything in the future. It would just be to get them on the hook for 5 years, to get them to be a good, responsible person for at least that first 5 years. But what I'm asking for basically is just your guys' support, that if I bring you a case of somebody who has violated the land management plan, that you would support in the future of, okay, this person, you know, needs an enforcement action, they need the civil infraction because just like somebody doesn't control weeds and doesn't have this land management plan, this would be, you know, a bad case scenario where this person has gone around their contract. Since we do want to treat it like a contract, I would just, you know, ask for you guys' support in the future. If this does come up and somebody flouts it, just says, I don't care. I signed it, but I don't care. I just, you know, look to you guys to support this this contract style. So
you're talking about this 1,000-foot buffer. That's fine for ag land. What about rural land? Rural zone land?
I don't know if that's
the same thing. We actually have more rural zone land in the county than we do ag land.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's interspersed God knows where. I don't know how they made their decision to classify it as rural land, but anyhow. So, you know, there's a lot of it that could be sitting there and going, well, shoot, they don't have to do squat because it's rural.
Mm-hmm. So I think that this provision in the law is specifically for when it's impacting somebody's livelihood.
So this is a Washington code. It's not a
So this
RCW.
Is,
it's a,
no, it is an RCW. It's this one.
Yeah, it is. I'm sorry. It's 1710 or whatever.
1710-154. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I got that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's specifically for ag land. I'm open to also including a buffer for rural land. It could be 1,000-foot, it could be, you know, 500, or whatever you guys want to push for. But really, the idea is just that we get them on the hook for something. They sign a contract, they're on the hook, they know it, you know, they treat it like a contract and they refer back to it so that we don't start off from square one every single time.
I guess so, we get the way it is, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we go ahead with the ag land and the 1,000 foot, mm-hmm. see how that goes for this year,
mm-hmm.
then if we do want to do something for rural, scale it down, same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's going to be a heck of a load then.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
See what that looks like for next year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It provides a little more flexibility for the landowner and the field inspector to work out a plan that is going to provide enough buffer mm-hmm. to neighboring properties
mm-hmm. and, maybe
and control the weed and get some progress going in the right direction.
Right. And if we're talking to the rural ones, maybe they just take care of it but without contracts and stuff. But see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, okay. So I just wanted to kind of preface any future interactions with land management plans with just that request from me that you guys treat it as a contract, very serious, just like you guys did kind of informally of, hey, we'll waive the fine this year, next year we don't want to see you, that type of thing, that same level of seriousness where you don't want to interact with the same person year after year after year and get them to the last stages of the fine year after year after year. We want to avoid that. Okay, I will move right along to the next agenda item on the Priority Weed Control Assistance Program. You've got an Excel spreadsheet of kind of our budget, and it's not as clear as maybe it could be. But I'll explain it to the best of my abilities. Maybe Kevin and Danielle will be able to chip in a little bit on explaining. So all of vegetation management is grouped together as one general fund entity. We have contracts that we complete for other departments, other groups, and railroad too. Things like that, City of Camas, stuff like that, where we get money coming in. We both spend from the same pile of money, basically. So you budget. Can see...
Oh, I said budget. Same budget. Pot of money, yeah.
Yeah. So you can see toward the bottom where it says overall budget, there's those line items. You've got 17, 18, and 2019 as well. And 2019 is just through April 15th. So then the next item, next line, less revenue from county control. So you can see what's coming in from things that we control, kind of our contracts. From here, you can see what remains... what the difference is, and then from that we kind of extrapolate the field inspection program and what we have to work with. So in parentheses you can see what the field inspection program consumed for 2017-2018, and below that in bold you can see kind of what remains after the control side that Danielle coordinates and the field inspection side, what they both didn't touch out of the overall budget. So, yay, we have a small surplus where we didn't actually use every last dollar. So, from this, you can kind of get an idea of what the field inspection program is using as budget and potentially could use more if they needed it. So then we have a lot up above, we have a lot of the different activities, the coding that we code out our time to. So I just talked about the 1,037 people that we talked to at the Home and Garden Idea Fair. You can see that's the second item. 2017 2018, they're right there. We didn't actually get it all done for 2019 yet, which just happened. So we'll get numbers there. And then you can see each one of these. Why I wanted to show you this is specifically for the activity with the number 001182 that's titled FIP Noxious Weed Control. So, specifically in 2018, we started using that for all of the times when the field inspection program, under certain circumstances, would control weeds for a landowner. Hmm. And obviously they're not paying us to do it. We're doing that for free under specific circumstances. 2017, Kevin, were we doing that? No, or something? It was for something else. Yeah, okay. So I just wanted to make sure before I misspeak there. So
no, that's accurate.
Okay, so that's specifically for 2018. Ignore 2017 for that. So you can compare what we spent there, $14,841, and what we had that we didn't spend, basically, in bold at the bottom there. And I bring this up specifically in the context of the Priority Weed Control Assistance Program, because this seemed to be a question that you guys had had before of, okay, how much budget do we have? Is there budget available for this program, or is this eating up budget that we don't have? You know, what's our capacity? You can see that it fluctuates quite a bit from 2017-2018 as far as what we have remaining. But suffice to say, here are the numbers, and we do have remaining capacity. If we wanted to keep it the same as it was last year, slightly increase it, we have the capacity for that. And I'm just making the case that it's really effective. For what we pay for it, it's really getting the job done. And I'd like to show you guys more before and after pictures of, you know, here's what we're actually doing for people, and here's where we start reducing the infestation in the right direction. Maybe we wipe it out. Maybe we turn it over to the property owner and we keep coming back and take pictures of it again and show you guys that, yep, yeah, it's going that direction. It's getting wiped out for those priority weeds, the Class A's and certain select Class B designates. That's what I want to be able to report.
If I could just add a couple things before you guys ask questions. So if you look where it says overall budget, on an annual basis, the budget for vegetation management is about $1.5 million. And then Danielle's, like Justin mentioned, Danielle's crew does a lot of spray work, right? And we get paid for doing that work. So that's where the revenue comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And so our revenue target that the county sets for us is about $1.1 million.
Mm-hmm.
So if you subtract that out, we have about $400,000, give or take, that is what we would call general fund subsidy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's where we don't have to repay the general fund for that work. And we've always called that's what we assign to the field inspection program.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about $400,000-$450,000. And so what Justin shows you on the top of that sheet is all of the tracking numbers that they use to code their time. What that doesn't include is, like, Chris Walker, the office assistant, and how she has to support the program. It doesn't include any of my time because I don't use any of those tracking numbers. It doesn't include their vehicles because those don't specifically hit the tracking numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So those are all administrative costs that kind of fit into that budget. So when they just charge $238,000 a year to doing work, it also needs those additional expenses kind of added to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you get closer to the $400,000 for the course of a year. And then I would just point out that, so Justin mentioned that noxious weed control number, $14,000 spent last year on what we call the Priority Assistance Control Program.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the FIP coordination number, 7656, they spent $113,000 last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then the FIP survey, they spent $66,000. Mm-hmm. So the two of those together, almost $180,000 surveying and coordinating with property owners to get control.
Right.
Whereas they only spent a fraction of that, 10%. Going on to the land and controlling weeds for people.
Mm-hmm.
And that is much more effective than multiple touches, multiple visits, just trying to get somebody to comply with the law. Mm-hmm. That's why we've always kind of pushed this Class A Priority Assistance Program, because they're the most important weeds, and we get the most effect, the most resolution, and the quickest in the way possible.
And it really helps, too, if we can turn over a property to somebody and we can say, I know exactly where all your weeds are. I pulled them all myself last year.
Yeah.
And we can tell them it's going to take somebody who's young and able-bodied about 2 hours of work, because I know, because I did it. It really makes it, I mean, you'd have to be a real stinker to sign off and say, yeah, okay, you know, do it for free for me. And then after that, yeah, well, you know, I'm not really interested. You did it, and, you know, you were a good sport about the whole thing. No, I'm not going to pitch in at all. I'm not going to do my share at all, you know. That you know, we're almost kind of guilting them a little bit. Like, we did it for you. Now you take over, you know. I think it works really well in that sense.
Or hire a contractor.
Exactly.
Yeah, how often do you take and send the jobs to... And I'm trying to remember your name. I'm
Leon Goodman.
Leon Goodman.
Weed Wrangler.
Yeah, Leon. So how often do you take and send, you know, your jobs to Leon instead of doing them, you know, this $14,000? It's like this woman that wrote back and, you know, was you know, worried about going to hiring a tractor to go in or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how often do you take and send jobs to a private contractor, not just Leon, but others? Yeah.
The format that we use is always our mower and sprayer list. Mm-hmm. That list gets included with every warning letter, every violation letter, and it's always available on our website.
Mm-hmm.
These are companies that we've vetted in the sense of called them, made sure they want to be on the list, made sure they're still in business, you know, that type of thing. So we don't give preference to any one person on the list. We can't endorse any one person. That wouldn't be appropriate. But we always say, if you need to know the names of some people, here's our list.
I'm
on that list.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I just got on the list just recently.
Mm-hmm.
The list came out, what, 2 weeks ago? Maybe three, something like
we've
that?
We've had it out, but went through and updated. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And since then, I've been, you know, I've had calls from about three different people that have said, hey, you know, we were, and the way they say is, you know, we were referred by, meaning they gave, you know, here's the list, call them, you know, and so the last one was I referred back to Blaine for the inspectors to go out, because it's like 5 or 6 acres of nothing but very mature poison hemlock. So I went, yeah, you guys don't take a look at that one, because there's anyway, it wasn't a pretty one. So it works well, it seems to.
It's a lot like the septic tank inspection list they send out.
Or backflow for water sprinklers.
Right. Mm-hmm. I had one question on your spraying now. Mm-hmm. You said they get paid for that.
Mm-hmm.
That money goes into the general fund, or does that stay into the weed control board?
Yeah, so it stays in the general fund.
Mm-hmm.
Danielle's group does work for other... It does work for our own department, Public Works, other county departments, and even other city or local jurisdictions. Like, we do work for the city of Camas.
Really?
We're looking to get a job with the Battleground Lake State Park.
Yeah.
So that money, because we're funded in the general fund, goes back to the general fund. We don't have our own separate fund.
I think we talked about that before, the fines.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't come to us.
It just goes straight into the general fund. It, when it's coded in the general fund, we get credit for it towards our revenue target for the year. But
so you're talking about getting paid for spraying. Who's paying?
All the different counties that, or all the different
municipalities
that own land.
Oh, I got you. Okay, it isn't like some landowners paying.
No. Basically, the way we view it is, we're trying to make sure all county lands are in compliance, so we're not hypocritical.
Yeah.
And so, in theory,
well, that railroad up by us is a county, isn't it?
It is county. It's 28 miles
private.
Of track. County owned.
It's
leased
a
to a private entity.
Yeah.
But it is a county.
That's arguing back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of that.
Okay. I got you.
Cool. All right. Yeah. So I just wanted to show you guys that budget numbers. Thanks, Kevin, for...
So the only other question I have is weed control board. Gosh, $7,322 last year. my gosh, what trip did we go on? Or did we go to Disneyland and I didn't get called?
It was for the donuts.
Yeah. Wow, the donuts, man.
Yeah. Donuts and coffee.
Wow.
That budget's empty. You didn't get nothing to Friday.
Forgot to report. Getting that budget under control.
It's staff time, probably, for
it's
your guys'
meetings. It's all staff
time.
Yeah.
That's really what it is.
Yeah. I got you. Okay. Right. Yeah, we don't get paid.
Yeah. Yeah. Moving along, then. Cutting that budget.
Huh?
I said, moving along, then. Cutting that budget.
So some of the staff is 100% to Weed Control Board? Or
no, it's all hours.
It's just, yeah.
It's all hours.
Yeah.
It's just
so hours.
At the end of the day, you say, well, Weed Control got 4 hours and somebody else got 4 hours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you can see for a comparison the county fair and the home garden, mm-hmm. You know, the times that we staff that booth. I can show you the the times that it's taken for the staff time there, but it's just whatever staff time, like me right now. I'm, you know, racking up the dollars sitting here doing this meeting. That's basically what it is. Yeah.
Charged to Weed Control.
Okay. Right. The board,
every hour and a half spent in the meeting is 3 or 4 hours of prep time, getting ready for the meeting, and so that's where all the time adds up.
And of course, your vegetation management overall, but Weed Control is just a small subsection of that. And yeah.
The field inspection.
So my site has 7 permanent staff plus a lot of temporaries, and we're just doing Weed Control on county lands.
Oh, that's so just on county lands, though.
On county lands, that does not that, and then sometimes the field inspection will pick up some of the pieces from my contracts to offset their budget. So
you can see staff members' names on the sign-up sheet and the hours that they filled on that. Sometimes we have 2 people in the booth, sometimes just 1, depending on what we think the public response is going to be. Mm-hmm. And then you can see in that line right there, Home and Garden Idea Fair, how much that costs to do that one weekend.
Your staff does all spray?
Mm-hmm.
No pulling?
No, we do a mix. We even do planting. We do lots of things.
They go back and replant the
dock. So you don't pull a large mountain on a campion to do some of the pulling?
No, we use Washington Conservation Corps. Yeah, we use them. They helped us pull all the garlic, mustard, and Salmon Creek Greenway.
So those are the ones that's gotten tickets of
mine? No, Washington Conservation Corps are students that are getting environmental science degrees. And they're way more educated in that perspective, and they're trying to find their niche in environmental science. So they get a stipend, and they get money back towards their college education. So we hire them.
So you're training them.
They actually have their own crew lead that trains them, and he's worked with us quite a bit. And they've been a great resource for us. But we use them on top of temporary staff, on top of permanent staff. So we've got quite a lot of properties to deal with when you consider it. We do all the parks, we do all the roads, we do all the natural areas, we do all the stormwaters, all the mitigations, all the infrastructures, the bridges, the signals, the guardrails, everything. So that's a lot of assets to touch and to make sure we're all compliant with only 7 permanent staff. So, yeah, we have a lot to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you guys.
The crew that we use for the roadsides is out of large. It's a state Department of Corrections crew. Mm-hmm. So that's the one that will be here the 13 days in July.
Is that the same one that helps Joe down at the Heritage Farm?
No, he uses the county jail.
Oh, county jail,
right?
Okay.
I think he uses the county jail.
So now, are they pulling or are they cutting?
They pull.
Because we had a crew up by our place a couple of years ago that cut with weed eaters.
Yeah, no, they don't have... the ones that we use on the roadsides don't have any equipment. So we outfit them with bags, and that's it. So they're pulling. Whether they get all of the root is another question, right?
Yeah, probably not.
Okay. I've never liked to pull.
Oh, it's fine.
You never get all the roots.
Right.
Yeah. But at least you get the seeds that haven't come out yet.
Yeah.
So yeah.
You
yeah.
cut the top off and
yeah.
bag that.
And then it'll flower again.
It's going to come back anyway. Yeah.
All right. So the last part, the last point I wanted to make about the Priority Weed Control Assistance Program is that we don't find a lot of new Class A, as a general rule, we don't find a lot of Class A weeds every year. The stuff that we have, we've got a pretty good handle on, and the ones that we don't have a good handle on, we're not offering to control for people. Just off the top of my head, milk thistle, you can see on your calendar, we've kind of crossed off. FIP assist is what we used to call it. We don't do any of that because there's just too much. So we've already kind of got an idea about what we can do and what we can't do, what our bandwidth is, and so I'm going to be working specifically to revisit places if we really, really have to, and there's no hope of the landowner getting as detail-oriented as we would be able to do, but that'd be more rare. What I want to do is hand them off and have this program be just about the same size and shrink. And when we do find weeds, we'd be able to add them on, you know, first year. If they meet the certain criteria. But
so along that lines, do you feel that what's happening is you've identified most of the areas with Class A, and we've got it contained more or less, that we don't see it continue to spread? And is that the deal, Justin? Or
specifically with things like big head knapweed, yes. False brome, I'm not sure. That's one that Blaine has a lot, and he's got his own program going, where we haven't taken on any of the false brome work. But things like garlic mustard, which is still a Class A, that's a very difficult one to assess. I think that's why Casey had started doing only the satellite patches, is because there are places where it's thick and it's just bad news. And there are landowners who might go through and pull some of them and miss some other ones. It's very hard to get every last one with garlic mustard. So that's pretty bad news as far as that one goes. But the ones that we have taken on purpose are to try to be containing it. Yeah. Okay. All right. And then I'll move right along to the decision that we need for unsolicited surveys, which is what I'm calling it when we have reason to believe that somebody has noxious weeds. Maybe, you know, somebody turns somebody else in. That happens. We haven't seen it, and they say it's down this private road. Or maybe it's been put in our database in past years, and so we know that at one point they had it, so we have reason to believe that it'll be back again. Kind of like that Class A letter that we already mailed out. It was there last year, so we have reason to believe that it's going to be there, but you put up a fence, so now I can't see it. For those unsolicited surveys where we want to go onto somebody's property, I need the board to decide to approve two different things. First, I have kind of an informational sheet that I've included. You can see this one that says inspections have begun. This is Okanagan County. This is how they have done things in the past. They kind of just mail this out or put this. I think this is actually put in the newspaper. So this is just a blurb that they put in their locally circulated newspaper. I just wanted to draw your attention to the third paragraph where it says, this notice is published according to the board policy that we may enter their property according to provisions outlined in RCWA 1710-160. This notice shall serve as reasonable attempt as defined according to that RCW. So, Okanagan County just kind of put something in the newspaper. Next, I'd like to show you
along like what Lee was talking about is you know, something like this could almost go in the tax deal is mm-hmm. along that line is you know, for current use people and, mm-hmm. and stuff. Yeah,
or everybody.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If the county's willing to do it, it would be for everything. Yeah.
So that's a very sweeping and ambitious idea. Yeah. to think that you can put something in the newspaper and then it counts as a reasonable attempt. And the next thing in your packets you'll see is just an excerpt from the Washington State Weed Coordinator's Handbook that's published so that weed coordinators will know kind of guidelines of where they stand on certain rights and responsibilities. And this whole thing outlines the right of entry and kind of best practices. What should a weed coordinator try to do for best practice to enter onto people's property, maybe when they don't want you there, or maybe when, you know, you're telling them, hey, we have reason to come on there onto your property, but maybe they're not hot on the idea. Maybe they don't actually refuse, but a lot of people are skeptical. Why should I let you come on my property? You're going to find something. You're going to find something on my property that then you're going to force me to control at my expense. You know, that doesn't sound like it's a winner of an idea. So that's a loser as far as that private property owner is concerned. So this excerpt from the handbook kind of lays out some of the legal backing as far as the U.S. Constitution, Washington State Constitution, and what is best practice. You've got some guidelines on the back of it, page 42 in the coordinator's handbook, where it talks about what's a reasonable attempt, because the law, state law, says you have to make a reasonable attempt before you just wander onto somebody's property. You have to actually try to contact them. So in this handbook, it talks about, you know, what do you think that should be? What is a reasonable attempt? And I kind of showed you the Okanagan County answer of what they think is a reasonable attempt. But you can see in this coordinator's handbook, they say that's not a good idea. They kind of have it as a guideline. Putting it in the newspaper really could not be could not constitute trying to contact the owner of the property. You know, there's a lot of out-of-state owners, and how would they, you know, have a copy of that newspaper? They wouldn't. So it talks about the open fields doctrine, about what's considered the reasonable expectation of privacy. You know, where is it that you have a right to enter, but you can see that they say it's not a good idea to just send it out in the newspaper.
Well, okay, so you're talking about Okanagan, and that's probably not reasonable or a reasonable attempt. But if we send a letter out in the tax forms, would that count as one? And then Kevin may know better. And then, you know, another. I'm just looking at the work you guys do of the letter after letter after letter. And if we sent one out as that, would that count as one? And then one letter as a second attempt, and that constitutes reasonable attempt.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
if you pay your first half and second half taxes, you got two. Previous year, then the next year.
There you go. That might, you know.
Each time.
I'm just thinking, is you guys spend so many hours, you know, and stuff on coordination and you know, and one thing and another else. And, geez, how many letters did you send out of this, you know, deal, this, you know, Class A letter?
84?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the staff time to prepare 84 versus 150, not too much difference.
Yeah.
But the staff time to drive back to all of those places and have them not know what we're talking about because I didn't check my mailbox. You know, we run into a lot of different things. When we talk about sending out a letter, it really does need to be certified. This whole reasonable attempt, as the law explains, you have to have a reasonable attempt before you. We have to have that documented.
Right.
You know, I have to sign an affidavit that says, yes, I did cause this to be mailed. You know, here's the certified information from the post office.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we'll have that documentation to show that. Yeah, we really did our due diligence. If we can, I'd like to have two votes so that we address this reasonable attempt. Now, the first one I've got in front of you right after that is a modified warning letter. The warning letter that we usually send out doesn't have the second paragraph from the bottom. The second paragraph from the bottom is new that I want to modify. And this is the reasonable attempt. We're already mailing warning letters to people. And what better time would we have when they're already reading, you know, that they have to control their weeds to tell them, hey, just so you know, we can come back, and at the time we come back to make sure you've, you know, mowed the field or done whatever, we can actually now enter your property. You know, this serves as your reasonable notice. This will tell you that we could come onto your property. So second paragraph on the bottom offers to let them join us in the walkthrough, which is kind of a gesture to let them know that they can be there. A lot of times when we're doing work for the knotweed program, people will allow us to survey their property along the water for knotweed, but they want to be there. They want to see what we're doing. They want to know, you know, that everything is on the up and up. And so we coordinate a lot of times with them to try to make our schedule fit there so that they can be there. It's a very reasonable request. So we do our best to accommodate that. So I'd like to have a vote, if we could, to change this warning letter so that we let them know that we might need to enter the property as part of the verification process. And well, this counts as this reasonable notice that this would be certified, and then, you know, they're on notice, basically.
Just because they let you on there once doesn't mean you can go back on there.
What do you mean by that?
If you went onto somebody's property once and did a walkthrough with them,
mm-hmm.
you still have to go through them again to do a second walkthrough.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wanted to change the warning letter because a lot of times we don't go on their property with them. In the beginning, we just survey from public roads and we see it. And we say, oh, that one over there has tansy. This warning letter that we're already sending should say on there. At the time where we come back and we're looking to make sure you've mowed it from the private road, well, now no longer are we limited to the private road. This letter tells you that we can come back and we can enter your property and make sure that you've mowed not only the stuff that we can see from the road, but also the other side. Right now we have that happen a lot, where people just mow what we can see, and then they're happy to let everything else go to seed. So if we have something that says we can enter your property, probably they'll think twice and they'll say, oh, boy, now I better get, you know, the stuff that you can't see from the road. Because it's, I don't want to say it's common knowledge, but I think it's pretty widely known throughout the county that we have not historically been able to enter somebody's property to survey. So a lot of people do know that we can only look from the road. And if we had a letter that now said we're not limited that way anymore, probably we would get more people that would actually mm-hmm. control everything.
And Justin, I don't know if you've talked with the attorney yet about this specifically, but mm-hmm. and maybe to answer your question, do we need to send a reasonable notice letter time we would want to enter? So if we enter, we send the letter, we enter, and then for some reason we need to come back, we would need to send another letter to reasonably notice. Is that your understanding?
So I have talked with the prosecuting attorney, and he liked both this letter, the modified letter, and also the procedure that we came up with. But my understanding with him was that it would be kind of an every year thing, where when we talk with them and we either send them a letter or we're talking with them, that would be for this year. Kind of like it is with knotweed. But I don't think that we would have to, you know, 2 weeks from now get another reasonable notice to them and another one and another one at the point where they have a reasonable notice. I haven't seen anything in the RCW that says before every single time it is before enter the property.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Well, I will so move that we modify the, what do you want to call it, noxious weed control required letter?
Warning letter, yeah.
Warning letter?
Mm-hmm.
And Bill, I think you should read that paragraph into the record so that it's
okay.
In part of the motion.
It does have a typo, too. I'm going to have to change it so that it doesn't say, please can call our office. It just says, please call our office. So
okay.
Strike that part.
All right. So I'll read it into the record here. When I revisit your property, I might need to enter your property for the verification process as allowed in RCW 1710-160. If you would like to join me in the walkthrough, please call our office. to discuss a good date. I am happy to accommodate you as much as possible.
I'll second it.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to adopt the noxious weed warning letter as, as an addition with that paragraph. Any other discussion, questions? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same. Okay. We have approval on that letter.
Great, okay. So the next thing that you'll see is a letter that has some comments in pink. Does anybody need a copy of the letter with comments? Okay. And right behind it is the procedure. You'll see it's got a table, and it's also on the back side. This procedure would be followed any time that we're looking to enter somebody's property that we haven't actually had a contact with them. So this would be providing reasonable notice to them and then executing this survey when it's not solicited. They didn't call us and say, hey, would you survey my property? Maybe they're getting turned in by a neighbor, or maybe we know in the past that they have had an infestation. But you can see in the first table why we would do this. A complaint database has recorded an infestation. We can't see it anymore. Maybe there's a fence, something like that. Or the last one, maybe I can see a corner of the property and there's 5 acres of it, but I can only see, you know, an acre. And it's just very significant in that acre. And I think to myself, boy, I wonder how much else is there on the property. So these would be the conditions when we would start this procedure. And the field inspector finds any of these ABC to be true. So in the case that they start this procedure, this letter that you have here with comments would be what they would send. This is the what we would call the reasonable notice. And the letter would be changed based on the circumstance. If somebody's turning you in and they don't really care to remain anonymous, then it could say someone saw this species growing on your property. Or if it's because we've documented it in the past, well, then it could be the species was present at this location in the recent past. So you can see that, you know, the last 3 years in the database would count towards having a recent the recent past. So it's got some notes there on the letter. So I'll give you guys a moment to read through this and make sure that it makes sense, but the second vote that I'd like to have is to just adopt this new procedure, the reasonable notice letter, and then also the procedure. I'll just let you know that, yes, I did speak with the prosecuting attorney, and he said that this was a good procedure, so he's been through it all with me, and you know, read the law and said, yep, the Washington state law is your authority to do this. So go by that authority.
Which prosecuting attorney?
It was Bill Richardson. Yeah.
Now, are you changing the procedure here at all, Justin, or that's just for our information?
So this would be the procedure that we go with. This procedure hasn't existed.
You're not necessarily making modifications to it.
Oh, it hasn't even existed.
This is new. Brand new.
Yeah. Oh. Yep, that's right. Why it doesn't have a number at the top.
Oh, I see. I got you. Okay.
Procedure X.X.X. Yeah, this is brand new. This is what I talked about last weed board meeting, producing a new procedure so that we could deal with these issues as they come up. This has happened a few times where we don't really have a way to tell somebody we're coming onto their property, we're providing them the notice. So
okay.
This would be how we deal with those.
More questions or
one motion? Of the questions I have, we got ore. On the ore, you said that the complainant could be, when this letter sent out, they could request who complained. Is that?
No, we would respect the anonymity as much as possible by law. because it's all public record, there would be a way for them to find out if they wanted to go through the whole process with the public records request, and they went through that whole thing. But as a rule, we would always respect people's anonymity, just because that's always been our policy. It's not to incite neighbor against neighbor, really. It's more about enforcing the law and not about poking people in the eye. Yeah.
Well, the other side I have is I'm sitting there going, how many times have you ended up with dispute between neighbors that boiled into this, you know, mm-hmm. that, well, I'm going to, okay, I'm going to take and turn you in and one thing or another, even if there is nothing there.
All the time. Yeah, every year we have many times where this comes up. Most of the time we find that it's not really tansy. A lot of times something's yellow out there. Well, that's, you know,
goldenrod or something.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of times St. John's wort. This has been all the time for us. So we would definitely use our discretion as far as understanding, how do you know it's tansy? You know, are you able to confirm it and that type of thing? And this procedure would be really our last resort. As I explained to the prosecuting attorney, this is one where we don't have any other options. What we'd like to do in the very beginning is just to say, oh, you've got a complaint for your neighbor? Let us onto your property then. You invite us onto your property, we'll look over the fence, we'll see that it's... Oh, no, I'm sorry, that's not tansy. Mm-hmm. You know, and it just puts it to rest right there. This is a procedure where we can't do that for one reason or another. And we would still need to be very, very sure that we weren't going in error, basically. And when I talked to the prosecuting attorney, he let me know that it would be much better for us to have an affidavit of a witness that says, yes, I am the person that's telling you this. You know, I know that it's tansy, and I'm the witness, you know. When we go before a judge to get a search warrant, to do an abatement, that we would be able to present evidence and we'd be able to say, you know, here you go. We wouldn't have to present any evidence to a judge or anything like that if they don't refuse. If they don't call us up and say, I refuse you entry into my property, don't go on there, I'm going to sue you, or whatever the case may be. If they just say, oh, I can come with you? Okay, all right, well, you know, I'll let you on and open the gate, unlock, you know, whatever has to happen. But we're not going to go crawling over gates or over barbed wire or anything crazy like that. This is mostly, I would envision this mostly from there's a vacant land that nobody responds to. It's been bank owned for years and nobody will, you know, get into contact with us. And so rather than wandering out onto vacant land with no policy in place, this would be the procedure that we would go by, so that we're, you know, acting in uniform. Nobody can accuse us of singling them out or doing something.
So there is a way that you can go on that property,
exactly,
and take care of that.
Yeah.
And then they probably would put that cost back into their taxes.
Well, if we do any sort of civil infraction or an abatement where we do control the weeds for them, then yes, we already have a procedure for that, where we've been following that for years. But how do we know it's there? How do we even get there in the first place? If I can't see it, I can't start that process. You know, we take pictures to prove to the judge, here's our abatement, here's what we did. How do we even get to that step? Well, we haven't been able to, so that's why I'm trying to do this.
So when do you start using drones?
It actually did come up with the prosecuting attorney. I didn't bring it up. There's a lot involved in that. By federal laws, flying over people is not allowed.
What if you're sitting out on the road and you just take a drone, fly it straight up, you know, 300-400 feet? Well, boy, you'd get a whole lot better view.
Yep.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in your airspace, but
yeah.
I mean, it's anyhow.
Yeah.
As one that, you know, we fight on our farm, we fight weeds all the time, and I've got a question for you later, but I mean. And it's a challenge in agriculture and stuff. And I sit there and I watch the neighbors and go, dang it, I am sick and tired of battling weeds that are coming in from the neighbors. Now, one of them was really great. It's now a piece of county land that the thistle doesn't blow over from anymore, and mm-hmm. one thing another, and that's great. Yeah. But anyhow, okay.
Okay.
So it was good for a joke. Okay. I'm
yeah. Yeah. Well, it might be something in the future, and we could address it at some point in the future. But really, we run into a lot more problems with that. I'm very able to go in front of a judge and say, this picture that we took with a nice camera, zoomed in as much as we could from a public road, clearly shows Tansy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I'm 400 feet in the air and I see a yellow blob, I'm less confident if I would go in front of a judge and say, this yellow blob is Tansy. Well, maybe, maybe not, you know, to be able to prove that, have that be evidence.
Just need a better drone.
Well,
right. They've got a big RT one.
They're there.
Wow.
Yeah.
It is.
They're there.
You
it
can
is.
Do it
with
the one that we were looking at.
Yeah.
You had to have this. Yeah. You have better quality than what you have right now on your cameras.
That's mm-hmm. for another well, debate. I'm going
to. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
If you
yeah.
wait
back.
For the Tansy to get yellow, you're going to have to move pretty fast.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
And how else would you see it with a drone, too?
Yeah, you can't tell vegetation.
Right. There are a lot of privacy issues with the drone, too. It's like people can...
Yeah.
Oh, my wife likes to lay out in her backyard where there, nobody can see her from the ground and, you know, whatever. And
so the coordinator's handbook actually talks about that.
And we had that discussion before.
41 and 42 lays working that on. Out.
Yeah.
So, you guys want to make a motion?
Motion or a second? And a second, I guess it is. Or not.
For this?
For this.
I make a motion that we accept.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call it, that's been addressed to us, a new letter to be sent out.
The letter and the survey procedure?
Mm-hmm. Letter and survey procedure.
Okay.
Okay. I'll second it if
okay.
you.
Yeah. We have a motion and a second to adopt the letter and the unsolicited survey procedure to go with it. Other discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same. Okay. You have a new procedure and a letter to send out?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right.
That takes care of that. Items from the board?
Yeah, I got two and three.
Group. Okay.
Work crews. You talked about the work crews. What's the Larch Mountain work crew? How many members on it?
It varies. That's the problem.
Okay.
So I think
it varies from what?
I want to say it can be anywhere from 8, but it can be down to 5.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then they come with a crew lead.
Mm-hmm.
And when during fire season we get crews that are canceled,
mm-hmm.
so we may or may not have them even though they're scheduled because of a fire.
Okay.
Yeah. It depends on behavior.
That
on behavior.
Yes, they have to behave, and then they can come. If they don't behave, they don't get to go.
Oh.
So okay. Their crews can vary in size.
Okay. Then what about the county work crew?
The county work crew also is shrinking in size. There's not as many, so they're canceling internal county work crews often. We don't use internal work crews, Mabry crews, with weed control per se. We use the DOC, which is the Larch crew, but they are very limited as well. Sometimes we'll only have 3 people in the crew.
Why is the county crews diminishing?
It's a judge thing and a community service thing that they have to be asked to do. And a lot of them, my understanding is, a lot of them aren't getting the community service requirement, or they're not showing up to their scheduled time. So we're also getting canceled crews there.
So if they don't show up, is there any repercussions for that?
I'm trying to get to the bottom of the barrel. I'm not a part of that, so I'm not sure.
Okay. I'm not sure how it works, but I believe so. If you don't do your community service, then it... You have to pay the fine instead of the community service, or you get referred to.
I know an individual. It's something new that came across here the other day, and it was a speeding ticket in the city of Ridgefield. 35 and a 25, and anyway, he ended up with a fine out of it, and they went before the judge. Oh, he didn't go before the judge when he was supposed to, but he went back afterwards. Anyway, he asked if they can make payments, and he said, yeah, $25 a week. But you miss one payment, you lose your driver's license for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So there's repercussions for not making that payment. That was the same thing.
Yeah.
That's where my mind was going. If they don't show up for their work crew, they should get another day or two tacked on. Yeah, I mean, I'm just make them accountable to that commitment. It's too easy not to show up for work, you know. And no, you're not going to get fired.
Yeah, we don't typically use Mary crew per se. They use the DOC, and then the DNR is the fire crew, and they're the ones that come with tools, but they're a lot more money.
Uh-huh.
The Washington Conservation Corps, the one that I have, is different. They're students, so that's the one that we use on county lands per se.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's a lot of varieties of crews, and they all cost different dollar values.
Mm-hmm. Next question is: next time, can we have these pages numbered before you copy them? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Oh, yeah.
So
we'll
be on page 7.
Uh-huh.
So we can keep track of where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you got a 42 and a 4, make them consecutive so that we... Okay.
Mm-hmm. On the handouts, yeah.
Weed-free comment. Okay, the weed-free comment. I've still got some weed-free straw left. I didn't try to get rid of it really this year, but I've got some. One of the contractors. But... there's a lot of the contractors that are getting individuals to just go out and cut everything. Just fields here and there and everywhere, and they turn around, not weed-free, are using it for erosion material. The contractors are using it for erosion material. And doing lots of patches with tansy and everything else. Mm-hmm. I have not seen it personally, but I've heard another individual.
You hear these stories. We hear them too.
Yeah. Getting just from soup to nuts. And there is no, the county has an ordinance to use weed free material. Maybe they need to have the parcels surveyed. I'm not saying for weed free, but say where did it come from? And actually have some kind of, not a certification program, but something where the individual that's making it has to put a number on it to correlate with the parcel, correlate from where the address, you know, they wouldn't have the parcel numbers. But there's tons of that happening out there, tons of it.
So, like labeling each bale of straw where it came from?
Well, no. Usually, which field? Field 10, field 15. They, on the east side, they do that with their alfalfa hay. They what circle it comes out of, 816 or 819, and that's for 1,000 bales, you know, or whatever that way. But they usually do that when they put it in a stack so they know where it comes from. But there is a lot of that going on, and a lot of them are just cutting junk. That's the only comment. And here we're after a weed-free, we're the weed board, and I have institutional knowledge that a lot of that's happening.
Yeah.
A lot of it.
They certify one section, but cut it all.
Well, they don't certify anything. It is not certified.
Oh, it's not certified.
None of it's certified.
So, along that line, Lee, is a question I have, is that, okay, when they bring this certified straw into a project, and they bust the bales open, and of course they pull the twine and blow the stuff around, what happens to that twine? Or does somebody just take that twine and go, well, gee whiz, I'm going to go get my load of uncertified, and here's my twine, you know, and then here's my twine. Every time they, you know...
Well, there's two answers to that. Number one, most of them don't do that. Most of the crews put the twine in with the straw, and it's blown out there in a project, too. The other thing is, actually, I had a request here 3 weeks ago, Clark County PUD needed some certified, but they need the cert papers too. I had some down on the refuge. I had to take some bales down there. They're building a new bridge across the refuge. And the contractor, he needs certain papers with it. So there are individuals that are doing it, but there are a lot, I would say probably 90% of the contractors out there do not use certified straw or... And so a lot of straw doesn't have to be certified. A lot of these, like ryegrass fields, grass straw, them fields are clean. They make them clean. But it isn't them that are using that. It's the ones that are just using every 5-acre patch or a 20-acre field needs to be clipped because the weed board's on them.
Yep.
So they go out and clip it and they bale it and then they sell it to the contractor and he spreads it.
But even your certification can be just run through a copy machine and copy, can't it?
Yeah, yes, it could. But the certification, you've got the colored string on it. But yes,
that's what I'm saying. If you break those bales open, save that string, and the next time they come along, the guy comes along and he goes, "Well, did you use certified straw?" And he goes, "Yeah, right here. Here's the string." And
yeah, usually it's there in a pile when they come along.
Yeah,
I'm not so concerned about them doing that. If they want to try and do that.
I know horse people do that. They buy certified hay.
Yeah.
Save the string.
Go into
put another one. Go up to National Forest. Oh, yeah, I got certified hay.
Right. Or they leave the certified bale in the trailer and they feed the other stuff while they're out camping.
Because
you get one or two of the certified and you get a dozen of the other when they go trail riding.
It's kind of the honor system, yeah.
So that's. But there is a lot of that's going on.
So. I know from a county perspective, and Kevin could probably speak to this. I know that the PMs, the project managers on county projects, check for certified hay, and they're on them. I was on the 10th Avenue, the new bridge that goes, over to the fairgrounds, and there's string all over because, they use all the certified hay, and then we asked them to go back in and pick it all up and throw it all away.
You have the same crew I've got.
Jeez. How long is it going to take to rot?
Plastic toilet. But I guess what I'm saying is I think county projects are definitely being watched.
Okay.
I don't know about other residentials and buildings and that kind of thing.
Yeah. A lot of residentials.
It's probably something where Justin could work with some of the other departments.
Right.
Our building department and probably our development inspection program. So that we could look at how it's being done with the private contractors.
Yeah.
And stress to them that it needs to be done because we're taking steps backwards on a lot of that.
Yeah.
Scrutinizing it a little bit. I think I probably would honest them up a lot.
Yeah.
Right. If they knew it was
Checking.
Yeah. You know, and at the same time, you have a home project or a subdivision project, and they're spreading straw around the houses and one thing and another. Well, shoot, what's going to happen is they're going to go in and break that up and put lawns in anyhow.
Right.
So, there's a lot of that that really doesn't matter that much and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So, anyhow.
Okay.
Okay.
Public comment?
I have one. You were talking about like the notifications, and I just wanted to make a couple comments. One, several years ago when the comments were sent out when the Japanese knotweed programs were starting out, there was like 3 pages of legal, ease with it, that, 5 years of hold harmless and on and on and on and on, and I went, screw it, I'll take care of it myself, it's not that tough, dig it out, do it right. But I bet you most people looked at that and said, I'm not letting anybody on here because somebody drives over my barn and I have to pay for it, et cetera. They didn't do that with the garlic mustard. In fact, I called them down there and they said, no, if anything happens while we're on your property, we just want to work with the people. And it was night and day. And that kind of thing, I don't know if you noticed that the response probably went up with the garlic mustard than it did with the other. Because, if they're going, I'm going to have my lawyer review this to make sure that if they come on the property, I'm covered, So, the other one, though, is more of a question. do you have like education programs that landowners can go out like on the I didn't see anything on the website or something that says, you know, these are the things that we're trying to accomplish. These are the things, you know, it's not like, gee, you're terrible because you've got a tansy on your, you know, on your land or whatever, but to help them understand that really it's a good thing. Because I talk to a lot of people and they have no clue. They just really don't.
Right.
And so, you know, I mean, I had a nice chat with one of my neighbors when, you know, after pulling, you know, having a crew of five pulling the tansy out of a field I leased, and next door were 5 foot tall tansy plants, you know, that was just growing like mad. So same thing that you talked about. But if there was something that I have no concept on what it would take to do that, but if there's a way to have some kind of a education program for the general public, the landowners, to be able to have a free access to really understand what you're trying to do. You're not trying to control their land. You're trying to help them control, you know,
things. Well, to be good neighbors.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think in the last few years we've changed the attitude of the control program from the board as far as working with the landowners as opposed to enforcement so much. That's a last resort. We want you to be educated. We're doing the outreach programs of the fair and lawn and garden, but to put on a program I think is not real practical to invite them in. But we do more and more education in the leaflets, and we'll come out and talk to you, or they will. So. Mm-hmm.
And what's your name, sir?
I'm Don Kirko.
Okay. So. Yeah. I'd like to address some of those. Firstly, on the garlic mustard versus Japanese knotweed, you definitely did notice a difference there. You know, with Japanese knotweed, it's a grant-funded program, and the grant actually provides the waiver form for us as a stipulation of. Receiving that funding, we have to have the people sign that waiver that the state produces. And they're specifically interested in being able to check up on us. So you'll notice in that waiver form, it says, and I've had people highlight this for me, not only county staff, but also state staff. They want to also have permission to come onto your property 3 years from now to see, okay, well, you know, the county people said they did this. Let's go back and take a look. You know, what are their results like? So they have this waiver specifically set up for that. So people have highlighted, okay, state, their contractors, county, their contractors, you know, how do I know who's going to be out here? And so that is a concern we've run into, you know. Yeah, and that is a real concern. I've been looking for ways to work with the state, and I know Casey before me also was asking about that. Can we modify this? Can we, you know, still have this be what you guys want at the grant level, but make it a little bit more friendly? And that's what we really have tried to do with the garlic mustard. On a county level, when it's our program, we will tell people, you know, this is really just as bare bones basic as it can be, you know, and really even in the state agreement, if you really read it, it's talking about the logical and intended consequences. That's what we're indemnified from. So if you like the shade that your knotweed provides and we kill the knotweed and now you don't have the shade, well, sorry, but that's the logical and intended consequence of killing the knotweed. Now, if we go onto your property and hit your barn or do whatever else, we're on the hook for that. You know, nowhere was that logical or intended. So at any point, you know, the waiver doesn't really cover the types of things that people might worry that it covers. And then secondly, about education programs, I would welcome any sort of pointers or tips you've got on increasing the positive outreach that we do versus only the enforcement side. I mean, earlier on I was talking about changing the program such that we do less of a bluff and less of a threatening letter when it comes to tansy. And we don't send this warning letter out for somebody who has a few tansy plants. What I'd like to do is I'd like to get in touch with them. I'd love it if they saw our phone number and called us up, but I don't want to threaten them over it because we're really not going to go all the way down the steps to the very final, you know, finding people because they only have a few. I'd like to have a different version of the Tansy letter that I send out that just says, hey, you have Tansy. This is bad news. It's going to spread. You know, talk to us about it. That type of positive outreach is absolutely fantastic.
I'd love to have the opportunity to work with you and help you understand the best way to take care of it so that it can affect your neighbors. You know. Yep.
Did you get a copy of the warning letter that we usually send out?
I was looking at this.
Yeah, and from the very beginning, it starts talking about you have to take corrective action by the certain day. And the version that I would send out wouldn't have that same type of language in it. Somebody just moved here from another state, and they have no idea. I want to tell them that Washington state law is different, and they have a requirement, but not threaten them with a timetable. I want to have a version of the Tansy letter that just says, talk to us, because we'll tell you how to keep this under control and not spreading like crazy.
Okay. Can I chime in just real quick?
Mm-hmm.
So Justin and I are trying to redo our website. It's not very helpful to some degrees. We've also been using a lot of social media as well, which is something new. We've also been hitting Instagram, Facebook. We've also done Nextdoor, trying to connect with communities.
I recognized a couple of those names, but
sorry. But the intention is we're trying to change.
Yeah,
the
younger people have a great idea.
Yeah.
Of who you're talking about.
Well, we're trying to change the website intentionally to hit a lot of what you're asking about. I think and that's Justin's perspective and mine as well, because people don't know what we do, and also that we're a resource and that there are things that we can help people with, and we're not just the bad guys.
Have you taken a look at the? I think it's the City of Seattle's weed control website.
King County?
County. That's pretty good.
Yeah. The Noxious Weed Control Board, I don't know if you've gone to that one, the Washington State Noxious Weed Control Board website is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
We would love to change that, ours, to be similar to that, but we're stuck in a pre-purchased platform that we can't change completely. So we're kind of stuck with the county, what they purchased from a website perspective. But the Noxious Weed Control Board, fantastic. It explains Class A's, B's, C's, monitor lists, sensitive plants, who all the different coordinators from all the different counties are, why weeds are bad, why invasives, you know, matter. It's a lot better storyteller, which we're trying to get there.
Yeah. Leon, you had
it. Yes. That's exactly kind of what I want to do is I want to be kind of come in between the weed board and the customer. So I am on the list of approved vendors, and so when the board sends out their notices that of compliance to these various things in these letters, then. Even though that the weed board cannot endorse any vendor, but when I'm called, many times I'm called up and say, hey, I've got a notice from the county, and they're more likely to call me and say, hey, I have this amount of time that I need to respond to this. Can you help me? And so I say yes. And so my desire is that, and one of the purposes why I'm here, is to get all the information from you as a board so I can kind of come alongside the homeowner or the landowner and to do exactly what you're talking about, is to educate them on the needs, you know, of the weed board, the classifications, why it's important. And they will listen, because they have called me, they're more inclined to listen to what the recommendations, because they know that, because you're kind of the law enforcement and everything, you are the ones putting down the law, and me as an independent, that, you know, they trust. And so that's part of the purpose why I'm here, is to gather information. And one thing I'd request, I need to get these statutes of all the different things so I can explain to them what the board's desire is, these things that, and so I can sit down with them and explain why you're doing what you're doing, the reasons why that, and this is why it's so important, not only to yourself, But also all the neighbors around you, like you were saying, that how it affects everybody around you when these things get airborne and the various problems that you have. So that's kind of why I'm here, to do that and to come alongside, the property owner, and then to assist. It will be assistance to the weed board. And I'm new. I did this in Colorado. For just a little background that you may not remember, but I've been here about 2 years, and I did this in Colorado. I did that to explain that I had a large customer base. So I'm new here. I'm still building it up. But that's kind of what I try to do, is to explain to people. And to go to fairs, I've talked to several different WOLCO to try to get in there and some of these places to maybe to talk to some of their customers to explain to them about noxious weed, give them some literature and things like that. But they have some rules and stuff that sometimes is difficult. WOLCO, I went and talked to the manager. She's been really nice to me, but she says the upper management told me, says, well, we can't have you do it at our store in the Battleground, WOLCO, because if you do it at that store, you have to do it at all the 21 other stores. And I said, well, I'm doing this for a favor for you. So I'm willing to talk to people, and that's what I've done in the past. So that's, I just kind of want to let you know that. So I need to get, if I can get these, or if you can tell me of the website, if you have a printed copy of all these things and the material, you know, because I've already got the weed list, and when I go to my customers, I give them a copy of your 2019 weed list and say, this is the weeds that the board has said that are noxious weed, this is the classification. And so I do education, which really helps them to, more or less, like you say, to understand the problem that they have. Because you're right, they don't really understand. And that's kind of what I do. And then they're a lot more compliant to take care of it. And especially when they're spending, you know, lots of money, when they're hiring me. And then I tell them what I'm doing, how I'm doing it. I'm putting in these chemicals, I'm putting in this sticker, I'm putting in, you know, this marker material so you can see, and it, you know, does all these things, and I explain a little bit about it. It's then they're more compliant to see, you know, like, yeah, I'll take care of this. And then I explain to them how often they have to do it. That's another big concern. If I give you, Leon, this money, you know, am I going to have to do this every year? You know, how often do I have to do this? And I say, well, no, once we get it under control. And then I explain the whole thing to it. So I love to do that type thing for people. And that's how me as an independent, I've built my business, is the customer relationship. So I just want to explain a little bit.
Okay. Thank you.
I got a question sort of along that line. Some people don't want to do any spraying. And I don't know what Roundup is getting right now. It's
a bad
taboo from
stupid
some
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
And I had a text last week, have you been spraying Roundup? Because I got a strong smell of Roundup. Luckily, I haven't been out
really?
Spraying. It wasn't me.
So Roundup doesn't smell. So
yeah. It was 2,4-D probably.
Huh?
Yeah. I found out from the neighbor that was doing it, but it wasn't me.
Sweet mouth. The warning is from the international something rather another that there may possibly be
World Health Organization.
Yeah. Yeah. So Roundup really sort of getting a
so
bad rap.
So if you're taking a bath in the Roundup, then yeah, you have a chance. You could probably get hurt by it, but you know.
Well, and it's basically a money grab. That was the guy was probably not wearing his protective equipment. Yes, he got infected because of negligence. I don't have any proof of that. That's just my own thought. Yeah. That because I've used the chemical a lot, and there's other ways you can get all the different manufacturers have different ways to get glyphosate, 41% glyphosate than Roundup, and Roundup's not the best.
What's that
place to get it anyway?
Anyway, we're getting way off track. You guys can discuss that on your own time.
Yeah,
I've got things to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
So
I got show and tell too. Do you know what that is?
Anyway,
now, I was told that was highly noxious.
You're adjourned.
I'm calling it, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we can get it.
Great, thanks.
Yep.